Have you ever watched a badly dubbed movie?
Oh yeah, it's the worst.
Right. You totally know the feeling.
Yeah.
Like the actor's mouth moves, they form a word, but the sound hits your ears just a fraction of a second later.
Yeah, and it is just maddening.
It really is. The entire illusion of the film just shatters immediately. You can't focus on the plot at all.
No, you can't feel the emotion of the scene either, because your brain is basically sounding an alarm.
Exactly. You become painfully aware that you're just staring at this glowing screen and the audio is pumping out of, you know, completely separate speakers.
It creates this really visceral sense of wrongness. The timing is off, so, well, the reality breaks.
But what if I told you that your own brain is dealing with that exact same lag every single millisecond of your life?
It's a crazy thought.
It really is. So welcome to the Deep Dive. We have a completely custom-tailored mission today just for you, the learner.
Whether you're prepping for a high-level neuroscience meeting or trying to catch up on the latest philosophy of mind.
Or honestly, even if you're just insanely curious about how your own head actually works, we have something really incredible to explore today.
We really do.
We are tackling one of the greatest, most stubbornly unsolvable mysteries in all of science. How your brain creates a seamless, conscious reality out of a chaotic, disorganized, and physically lagging storm of sensory data.
Because, I mean, the experience of being alive feels like a smooth, high-definition movie, right?
Yeah, totally smooth.
But what your nervous system is actually receiving from the outside world is more like a lagging, glitching video call on a terrible internet connection.
The fact that you don't feel that lag is perhaps the ultimate neurological magic trick.
It really is magic.
And the source material we're using to decode this magic trick is Bleeding Edge. I mean, it just came out. We're looking at a preprint published today, April 5, 2026, on the Broussard Research Archive.
Yeah, it's by an independent researcher named Jason Broussard.
And it is titled Temporal Coherence Resonance Framework, a Predictive Synchronization Model of Perceptual Integration.
It's a mouthful.
It is a huge title. And usually theories of consciousness are just dense, abstract philosophy. But this
one is different.
Right. This is basically an engineering manual for the human mind.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's unpack this. Because we are going to explore why your conscious experience feels so remarkably unified and what happens biologically when that underlying synchronization just slips.
This framework fundamentally shifts our understanding of the brain, honestly. I mean, for a century, mainstream science treated the brain primarily as a passive receiver.
Like it's just sitting there waiting for stuff to happen.
Exactly. The assumption was always that your eyes act like cameras, your ears act like microphones, and they just feed data up into the brain, right? Mm-hmm. And the brain just sits there processing whatever signals happen to hit it.
But Broussard's paper argues the complete opposite.
Yes. Your brain is a highly active, fiercely predictive engine. And it uses the precise timing of your brainwaves as its ultimate control mechanism.
It literally builds the reality you perceive from the top down.
That's the key. Yeah.
So I can promise you this. By the end of this deep dive, you will look at your own moments of insight, your daily distractions, and those rare, beautiful moments of being in the flow state in a completely new, mathematically grounded way.
It changes everything.
But before we get to Broussard's solution, we have to really understand the scope of the problem. In neuroscience, this is famously known as the binding problem.
Right? Yeah, the binding problem. It was first articulated in modern terms back in 1981 by a researcher named von der Malzberg.
Okay.
And to grasp the sheer scale of the engineering nightmare your brain is dealing with, we have to break down what is happening physically to your body right this second.
Right. So like light is bouncing off your surroundings and hitting the retinas at the back of your eyes.
Exactly. And sound waves are physically pushing against your eardrums. Pressure sensors in your skin are registering the chair you're sitting on.
And the crazy part is none of those things are happening at the same speed.
Not even close. I mean, let's start outside the body. Light travels at roughly 300,000 kilometers per second.
Insanely fast.
Right. But sound travels at roughly 340 meters per second. So right away, the physical signals from a single event, let's say someone clapping their hands 10 feet away from you, they arrive at your body at entirely different times.
Because the light from the clap hits your eyes way before the sound hits your ears.
Exactly.
Then, once the signals actually hit your body, the biological lag kicks in.
And that biological lag is massive. Converting light into an electrochemical signal in your retina takes a completely different amount of time than converting a mechanical vibration into a signal in your inner ear.
Right, the hardware is different.
Yeah, and then those signals have to travel down nerve fibers. Some fibers are heavily insulated with myelin, so the signal shoots down them incredibly fast.
Like a high-speed cable.
But other fibers are unmyelinated, so the signal just crawls.
Plus, they're heading to completely different zip codes in your head. Like the visual cortex is all the way in the back of your skull.
Yeah, the occipital lobe.
Right. The auditory cortex is tucked into the sides near your temples. And your somatosensory cortex, which is what feels the chair, is this strip running over the top of your head.
So we have these spatially distributed processing centers, and we have temporally asynchronous signals.
The data is just scattered across the brain, and it arrives totally out of sync.
Yet, when someone claps their hands in front of you, you don't see the hands hit, wait a fraction of a second, and then hear the sound.
No, you experience a single unified clap.
Right. So the binding problem asks, how does the brain take these scattered, delayed, out-of-sync signals and weave them together so flawlessly that you experience a single moment of now?
And historically, scientists have come up with a few ways to try and explain this. The text touches on the classic models just to show where they fall short.
Yeah, there's the feature integration theory.
Right, which essentially argues that spatial attention is the glue. Like, it says that if you focus your attention on a specific location in space, your brain binds all the features in that space into a single object.
Like binding the color red, the shape of a circle, and the trajectory of movement into a bouncing red ball.
Exactly. And then there's the global neuronal workspace model, which I think has dominated the field for a while now.
It has. That model suggests that your brain has this massive, wide-reaching network of neurons.
Right.
And when a piece of sensory information, like a really loud noise, is strong enough, it gets broadcasted across this entire network.
So the theory is that the actual act of broadcasting the information to the whole brain is what makes you consciously aware of it.
Yes.
But Brizard points out a massive glaring blind spot in these older models.
Mm-hmm.
They focus really heavily on the where, like the spatial integration and the static features being broadcasted.
But they largely ignore the critical role of time.
Exactly. They treat time as just a passive container that thoughts happen inside of. But TCRF argues that sub-100 millisecond timing precision isn't just a container. It is the actual glue holding reality together.
What's fascinating here is how fragile this temporal glue actually is. I mean, paper brings up several famous allusions to demonstrate this.
Oh, I love these examples.
Right, because if time is the glue, we should be able to break perception just by messing with the timing. And we absolutely can. Take the McGurk effect.
Okay, yes, the McGurk effect. If you haven't seen this, you really need to look it up. It is profoundly weird to experience.
It really messes with you.
It does. So researchers take a video of a person's mouth clearly forming the sound, gah, like G-A.
Right.
But they strip the audio and they replace it with a recording of the person saying ba, B-A.
Yeah.
So your eyes are screaming that the person is saying ga.
Yeah.
But your ears are absolutely screaming that the person is saying ba.
And so the visual and auditory processing centers are handing the brain two completely contradictory pieces of structural data.
Yeah.
But they are arriving at the exact same time. The brain is trapped. It cannot accept both as true.
So what does it do?
Well, instead of just giving up and letting you experience this confusing mix of a visual ga and an auditory ba, the brain actively forces a compromise to maintain a unified conscious experience.
It literally hallucinates a third sound.
It does. You, the conscious observer, will clearly hear the person saying da, D-A.
It just invents a middle ground. That is wild.
It has to, though. I mean, the brain's primary directive is to present a coherent model of the world. It completely abhors a paradox.
Okay, what about the flashlight illusion? The paper mentioned that, too.
Yeah, the flashlight illusion is another great one. Imagine a dot moving smoothly across a computer screen from left to right.
Okay, got it.
Now imagine a second dot flashes directly below that moving dot, perfectly aligned, but just for a few milliseconds.
Even though they are perfectly aligned in reality, your brain perceives the flash dot as lagging behind the moving dot.
Exactly, because the moving dot is predictable.
Oh, right.
Your brain has already calculated its trajectory. It's literally perceiving the moving dot slightly in the future to compensate for that biological processing lag we talked about earlier.
But the flash dot is a surprise.
Right. The brain hasn't precalculated it. It takes raw processing time just to register it.
So by the time the brain becomes conscious of the flash, it has already projected the moving dot further down the path.
Exactly. You perceive a gap in space that doesn't actually exist purely because of a gap in processing time.
Wow. It brings us back to the badly dubbed movie from the intro. If the audio and the video are off by just a few dozen milliseconds, the illusion of reality completely shatters.
Yes.
Older neurological models, like the Global Workspace, they're really good at explaining the screen and the speakers. They explain the hardware of the theater. But TCRF is stepping in to explain the sync cable.
And the brain is executing this synchronization under immense biological pressure. Well, it has to continuously weave together these asynchronous sensory inputs, but it also has to plan complex motor responses that take hundreds of milliseconds to unfold.
Right, like if you're driving.
Yeah, if you are merging onto a highway, your brain is taking in the visual speed of the car next to you, the sound of the engine, the feeling of the steering wheel.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it is planning a foot movement on the gas pedal that won't happen for another quarter of a second.
There's a lot of moving parts.
It's massive. So the temporal unity we feel, that sense that now is a singular, smooth, effortless moment, that is an active, deeply complex construction project.
So if timing is the missing link, the sort of sync cable of consciousness, how exactly does the brain act as the master clock? Like, how does it keep our reality from fragmenting into 1,000 out of sync pieces?
This brings us directly to the core mechanism of Brizard's new theory.
Right. Let's look at the temporal coherence resonance framework itself, and specifically its central engine, which he calls predictive resonance alignment.
Predictive resonance alignment sounds intimidating, I know, but it is a profoundly elegant concept. Let's break it down into its component parts, starting with the predictive aspect.
Okay.
This goes back to the paradigm shift we mentioned earlier. The brain does not wait for the world to happen to it. It relies on a concept called predictive coding.
Which means the brain is basically just a prediction machine.
A relentless one, yeah.
Yes.
It is constantly generating internal models that forecast what is going to happen next.
So, like, as you walk down a hallway, your brain is predicting the feeling of the floor against your foot before your foot even touches it.
Exactly. It predicts the visual shift of the walls as you move forward. These predictions are generated deep in the cortex and sent downwards toward the sensory processing areas, actively anticipating the incoming data.
And the paper gets very specific about how these predictions are transmitted. It's not just a single flat signal, right?
No, not at all.
The brain uses different oscillatory frequencies, our brain waves, to broadcast different types of predictions.
Yeah, the brain is essentially a symphony of electrical rhythms, and Brizard maps these rhythms to specific predictive functions.
Okay, let's go through them.
Let's start with the slowest waves, delta waves.
Right.
These oscillate at about 1 to 4 cycles per second. Because they are slow and long, they carry broad, overarching contextual information, the big picture of your current situation.
So delta is the slow foundational baseline.
Good analogy. Moving up in speed, we have theta waves, which tick at about 4 to 8 cycles per second.
Okay, and what do they do?
Theta is crucial for sequencing. It predicts the order of events. Like if you are listening to a melody, theta is predicting the timing of the next note based on the pattern of the previous notes.
Then we have alpha waves, around 8 to 12 cycles per second. The text describes alpha as a gating mechanism.
Yes. Alpha waves act like a spotlight, or rather, a shutter. They pulse on and off, defining brief windows of time where sensory information is allowed to pass through, and windows where it is blocked.
So alpha rhythms are heavily involved in attention, literally dictating when the brain is receptive to new input.
Exactly. And finally, the fast waves, beta and gamma waves. These can cycle anywhere from 15 up to 100 times per second.
That's incredibly fast.
Yeah. And these fast waves handle the microscopic details, the fine-grained, high-resolution features of whatever you are experiencing.
Like the sharp edge of a desk or the exact pitch of a siren.
Precisely.
I want to make sure I am visualizing this entire process correctly, because there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
So is my brain essentially a DJ?
A DJ?
Yeah. Think about it. It's standing at a turntable, constantly laying down these predictive beats at different tempos.
Okay, I see where you're going.
The slow delta bass line is setting the mood of the room. The theta drum beat is anticipating the rhythm of the song.
Right.
The alpha hi-hat is deciding exactly when the audience is allowed to hear the music. And the rapid-fire gamma synthesizer is laying down the intricate melody. And the DJ is playing all of this internally, just hoping that the sensory data coming in from my eyes and ears actually matches the track they've already built.
Honestly, the DJ analogy is practically perfect. Your brain is laying down a complex, multi-layered predictive track.
Wow.
And when the internal prediction, the beat the DJ is playing, and the external sensory signal, the actual movement of the crowd on the dance floor, when those converge perfectly in both timing and structure, the entire neurological system enters what Brissart calls temporal coherence.
Temporal coherence.
Right.
That exact moment of convergence, that perfect alignment between what the brain expected and what the world delivered, that is your conscious perception.
So you don't perceive the raw data itself.
No. You perceive the resonance between the data and your prediction.
But the crowd doesn't always dance to the beat, right? What happens when the prediction doesn't match the reality?
Then you experience a glitch. The system breaks. Think about a very common experience. You are sitting quietly in your kitchen, completely absorbed in reading a book. Your brain has a strong, stable, predictive model running. The delta waves know you are safe at home. The theta waves are tracking the sequence of the sentences. The gamma waves are decoding the visual shapes of the letters.
It's a tight, highly coherent state.
Exactly. Then, out of nowhere, a stack of ceramic plates falls off the counter and shatters on the floor.
A massive, unexpected crash.
What happens to your consciousness in that exact millisecond? You don't just register a loud noise while continuing to read your book seamlessly.
No, definitely not. You lose your place entirely.
Right. Your train of thought vanishes. You physically startle. Your mind essentially goes blank for a fraction of a second.
Because the DJ's track didn't include a shattering plate.
Exactly.
The DJ has to completely rip the needle off the record and just stop the music.
Yes. The discrepancy between the internal prediction of a quiet room and the massive auditory assault of the crash is simply too large. The temporal coherence breaks down instantly.
It has to reboot.
The brain has to urgently halt its current processing, drop the reading model entirely, evaluate this new, highly salient auditory data, and generate a completely new set of predictions about safety and your environment.
And the paper actually details the exact mechanics of how the brain calculates this mismatch. It's not just a vague feeling of surprise.
No, it's highly systematic.
Brissart introduces a theoretical mechanism called the coherence comparator. And this comparator evaluates incoming signals on two completely distinct axes.
This is where the theory gets highly specific. The first axis of evaluation is temporal discrepancy. In the paper's math, Brissart uses the symbol delta ta for this.
Right, delta ta.
This is purely about the timing or the phase offset. Did the incoming signal arrive at the exact millisecond the internal model expected it to arrive?
And the second axis is structural discrepancy, which is represented by the lowercase Greek letter delta.
Yes.
This is the feature or semantic mismatch. Basically, regardless of when it arrived, is the content of the signal what I expected it to be?
Evaluating perception on these two separate axes perfectly captures the nuance of how we experience the world. I mean, you can easily have a timing error without a structural error.
Give me an example of that.
Let's say you are playing catch with a friend. You know they're going to throw the ball, so your structural prediction, a round object moving toward your hands, is completely accurate.
Okay, structural delta is fine.
Right. But if the wind catches the ball and slows it down, it arrives at your hands 100 milliseconds later than your brain predicted.
Oh, I see.
That is a pure temporal discrepancy, a delta error.
So in that scenario, the brain doesn't need to rebuild the whole model. It just needs to stretch the timeline slightly. It quickly adjusts its phase alignment. It shifts the beat to catch the ball.
Conversely, you could have perfect timing, but a massive structural error.
Okay, what would that look like?
You are sitting at a diner. You reach for your glass of ice water, which you've already taken a sip from. You know exactly where the glass is, so your timing is perfect as you grab it. But while you weren't looking, the waitress swapped your ice water for a cup of scalding hot coffee.
Ouch.
Yeah. You grab the cup, the timing is flawless, but the tactile feedback searing heat instead of cord condensation is a massive structural discrepancy.
A huge lowercase delta error.
Exactly.
And your hand recoils instantly. You don't stand there thinking about it. The semantic mismatch shatters the perceptual model, triggering an immediate withdrawal reflex.
To truly understand how the brain decides whether a mismatch is just a minor glitch it can smooth over, like the delayed baseball, or a reality-shattering surprise that requires a total cognitive reset, like the scalding coffee, we have to dive into the core mathematics of the paper.
Yes, the math.
Brissart formalizes this entire predictive dance into a single equation.
Which brings us to the math of consciousness. Now, for the learner listening right now, if equations usually make your eyes glaze over, stay with us.
We promise it's not that bad.
Right, we're going to break this down without all the textbook jargon, because the logic behind the math is incredibly intuitive. It explains exactly why you act the way you do in different situations.
The paper introduces the resonance error equation. This equation basically governs your entire perceptual state. It reads, Re equals K1 times delta T squared plus K2 times delta squared.
Okay, let's translate that. Re stands for the resonance error. Think of Re as the total volume of the alarm bell going off in your brain.
Right.
The higher the Re, the closer your reality is to fragmenting. As we just outlined, the delta T is the timing error, and the lowercase delta is the structural or content error.
And the defining feature of this equation is the mathematical operation being performed on those errors. Notice that both the timing error and the structural error are squared.
Yeah, why did Brissart square them?
It creates a nonlinear penalty.
Break that down. What does a nonlinear penalty actually mean for our brain?
Well, it means the punishment for being wrong does not scale evenly. Let's look at a tiny timing error. If your brain's prediction is off by just a couple of milliseconds, it's a very small number.
Right.
When you square a tiny number, it remains a tiny number.
Makes sense.
This mathematical design means the brain is highly tolerant of microscopic jitter. It can absorb tiny delays, do a micro adjustment of its internal phase, and your conscious experience remains perfectly smooth. You are never even aware the error occurred.
But if the error is large?
If the deviation crosses a certain threshold, squaring it makes the resulting number exponentially massive. A large error becomes disproportionately, aggressively costly to the system.
The Re skyrockets.
Yes, the Re skyrockets. And the current perceptual hypothesis is violently shattered.
And if you connect this to evolutionary psychology, that makes perfect sense. I mean, the nonlinear penalty is a survival mechanism. Like, if you were walking through the woods, the light filtering through the trees is constantly shifting. The shadows are fluttering. Your visual system is racking up thousands of tiny structural and timing errors every second because the environment is just naturally chaotic.
Right.
If the penalty was linear, those thousands of tiny errors would add up quickly. The alarm bell would ring constantly, and your brain would constantly be rebooting its model of reality. You'd be completely paralyzed by the flutter of leaves.
But because the penalty is nonlinear, because the small errors are heavily minimized, your brain easily suppresses the noise of the shifting shadows. You just perceive a peaceful walk in the woods.
Until, you know, a shadow detaches from a tree and lunges at you.
Exactly. Suddenly, there's a massive structural discrepancy. The visual input of a lunging predator violently contradicts the prediction of static trees.
Because the error is large, the squaring function causes the Re to just explode.
The brain instantly drops the peaceful walk model and floods the system with adrenaline to build an evasion and survival model.
That brings us to the remaining variables in the equation, the K1 and K2 coefficients. These act as multipliers for the squared errors.
The paper terms these the precision weights. And crucially, they are not static.
Yeah.
No, the brain actively modulates these weights using neurochemicals, primarily neuromodulators like acetylcholine and dopamine.
Let's explore what this actually feels like for the listener. These K weights are basically the difficulty dials your brain uses to prioritize what is important in any given context.
And let's set up a scenario. You are playing a high-stakes, fast-paced sport. You are standing in the batter's box in baseball, and the pitcher throws a 95-mile-per-hour fastball.
Okay, highly focused state.
In that high arousal state, your brain floods your cortical networks with acetylcholine. This chemical flood physically alters the conductivity of your neurons, effectively cranking up the K1 dial, the timing priority.
So timing is everything.
Your brain is loudly declaring, I do not care about the structural details. I do not care what brand the baseball is. I do not care about the dirt smudges on the seams. I only care exactly when it is crossing the plate.
So because the K1 dial is cranked to the maximum, any slight timing error, any delta T, is heavily penalized. Your brain becomes exquisitely, superhumanly sensitive to temporal discrepancies.
Exactly. And now flip the scenario. You are sitting in a silent library studying a dense, incredibly complex textbook on quantum physics. Your arousal state is completely different.
The brain recognizes that timing is completely irrelevant here. The words on the page are not moving. They are totally static.
Right.
So the brain turns the K1 dial all the way down and cranks the K2 dial, the meaning and structural priority, up to the maximum.
The semantic content is now everything. If your brain's internal model predicts the word electron, but the text actually says positron, that is a structural discrepancy.
And because K2 is cranked high, that structural error is heavily penalized.
Your reading flow stops. Your eyes backtrack to reread the sentence. Your brain forces a high-resolution error correction because understanding the exact content is the priority of the current state.
Here's where it gets really interesting. I was thinking about how to visualize these floating mathematical weights, and it reminds me of a rhythm video game. Think of Guitar Hero or Dance Dance Revolution.
A rhythm game is a perfect proxy for predictive alignment, honestly.
Okay, so follow me here. The delta T, the timing error, is whether or not your finger hits the plastic fret button on the exact rhythmic beat of the song.
Okay.
The lowercase delta, the structural error, is whether your finger is holding down the correct colored button, like the green one instead of the red one.
Right, right.
And those K weights. Those are the difficulty settings you've selected from the main menu for that specific song.
And different modes prioritize different skills.
Right. If you choose Rhythm Master mode, the game cranks up K1.
Right.
It penalizes you heavily for being even a fraction of a second off the beat, but it might be forgiving if you occasionally hit the wrong color.
Because the beat is what matters.
Exactly. But if you play Melody Master mode, the game cranks up K2. It doesn't care if your rhythm is a bit sloppy, as long as you press the exact sequence of colored buttons required to build the chord.
And your brain is doing this dynamically every second of every day, adjusting the difficulty settings of reality based on whether you are trying to catch a ball, read a book, or listen to a symphony.
The elegance of the TCRF equation is that it proves perception is not passive recording. It is an active, highly regulated, heavily penalized game of matching internal expectations to external inputs.
Yes, it is.
So now that we have the mathematical blueprint of how the brain calculates its errors, this re-equation, we have to look at the physical meat.
The hardware.
Yeah, what squishy biological parts of the brain are actually doing this advanced math? Where is this rhythm game being played?
Brizard tackles this by mapping the math onto actual neuroanatomy. He outlines an intricate 6-step internal processing dynamic that happens incredibly fast. A full cycle recurring every 10 to 500 milliseconds, depending on the frequency band involved.
That is absurdly fast.
It is. Let's trace the physical journey of a perception.
Let's do a geographical tour of the brain. Where does the metronome live? Where does the timing actually originate?
We have to start deep in the center of the brain with a structure called the thalamus.
Great.
It's roughly the size and shape of a walnut, sitting right atop the brainstem. Historically, textbooks describe the thalamus as a simple relay station.
Like it just passes notes.
Right. Sensory data comes up from the eyes and ears, hits the thalamus, and the thalamus just blindly routes it up to the cortex. But TCRF elevates the thalamus to a much higher status.
It's the master clock.
Specifically, it looks at the massive reciprocal connections between the thalamus and the cortex, known as thalamocortical loops.
Okay, thalamocortical loops.
These loops are constantly firing back and forth. The text suggests these loops execute the first step of the dance, which is oscillatory initialization.
Meaning they start the rhythm.
They set the baseline alpha frequency. They act as the central metronome, keeping the broad rhythms of the brain in sync.
Okay, so the thalamus is keeping the beat, but a metronome just ticks blindly. Someone has to actually manage the orchestra, right?
That brings us to a specific nucleus located at the back of the thalamus called the pulvinar.
The pulvinar.
Yes. The paper gives the pulvinar a starring role in consciousness. The pulvinar is incredibly densely connected to the visual and parietal cortices. It doesn't just route data, it acts as a central hub, a conductor.
So what is the conductor doing? Exactly.
It is executing the sensory model comparison. The pulvinar monitors the different cortical areas. If it detects that the visual cortex and the auditory cortex are starting to drift out of phase, like if the rhythms are mismatching, the pulvinar literally gates communication between them.
It stops them.
It modulates their excitability to force them back into sync. It is the physical manifestation of the delta terror correction.
Okay, so the thalamus is ticking and the pulvinar is conducting. But where are the predictions actually being generated? We said the DJ is building the track from the top down.
For that, we travel outward, from the center of the brain up to the wrinkled outer surface, the cerebral cortex. But we can't just look at the cortex as a flat sheet.
Right.
It has depth. It is composed of 6 distinct horizontal layers of neurons, known as laminar circuitry.
And TCRF assigns very different jobs to the deep layers versus the surface layers, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. The deep layers, primarily layer 5, are the predictive engine. These large, deep neurons encode the internal models based on past experience and send their predictive signals downward toward the sensory processing areas.
Okay, so that is the second step, predictive encoding.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, the raw, unedited sensory data from the eyes and ears is coming up from the thalamus and arriving at the superficial layers, layers 2 and 3 of the cortex.
So now we have a collision course. Deep layers sending predictions down. Superficial layers receiving reality moving up.
And they meet in the middle.
When those two streams meet in the middle cortical layers, the structural comparison, the lowercase delta error, is calculated.
And if they don't match?
If reality doesn't match the prediction, the superficial layers generate a resonance error feedback signal and shoot it forward to higher brain areas, screaming, "The model is wrong, update the model."
But wait. How do these completely different layers, speaking different electrical languages, actually reconcile their signals?
Through a fascinating mechanism called cross-frequency coupling, specifically phase-amplitude coupling.
Okay, this is a dense term. Phase-amplitude coupling. I read through this section a few times. Let me try to explain the physical mechanics of this with an analogy, and you tell me if I have it right.
Please do. I'd love to hear it.
Imagine you were standing on a beach watching the ocean. A massive, slow-moving swell is rolling in. That slow swell represents the phase of a low-frequency wave, like theta.
Okay, the slow swell is theta.
Now imagine the wind is whipping across the surface of the water, creating tiny, rapid, choppy ripples. Those fast ripples represent the amplitude of high-frequency waves, like gamma.
That's a strong visual.
Here is the coupling part. The fast ripples cannot just exist anywhere. Because of the physics of the water, the violent high-amplitude ripples only occur at the very top, the crest of the slow swell.
Right.
In the trough of the swell, the water is relatively smooth. So the slow wave dictates when the fast waves are allowed to be active.
The underlying mechanism there is exactly right. In the cortex, the deep layers use slow rhythms to set the broad timing windows, the swells.
Yeah.
The superficial layers use rapid gamma bursts to transmit the highly detailed sensory data, the ripples. Phase amplitude coupling means the brain only allows the detailed sensory data to be processed during the specific receptive crest of the slow predictive wave.
So it groups them.
The slow wave physically limits the amplitude of the fast waves firing. They're inextricably locked together.
Which guarantees that the prediction and the reality are evaluated at the exact same millisecond. That is incredible hardware design.
It's remarkably efficient when it works.
But we're still missing a few pieces of the puzzle. What about movement? We don't just sit still and perceive. We act.
And that involves the cerebellum, the dense structure at the back of the skull. The cerebellum is packed with more neurons than the rest of the brain combined.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, and its primary job is managing incredibly fast motor sensory predictions. If you reach out to grab a cup, the cerebellum calculates the exact trajectory and the precise millisecond your fingers will make contact.
So it's predicting the physical world.
It feeds that prediction directly into the re-equation to ensure your physical movement matches your visual perception.
And the paper also mentions the basal ganglia, which sit deep in the forebrain.
The basal ganglia's role in this framework is to suppress competing hypotheses.
Like what?
When you look at an optical illusion, your brain might generate two completely valid predictive models. It could be a duck or it could be a rabbit.
Right, the classic illusion.
The basal ganglia act as the ultimate judge. They evaluate which model has a slightly lower resonance error, and they actively inhibit the neural circuits representing the loser.
They just shut it down.
They silence the noise so you can commit to a single, unified perception.
And finally, the hippocampus, the memory center.
The hippocampus is characterized by powerful, sweeping theta waves. In TCRF, the hippocampus uses these slow rhythms to provide the sequence context.
So it's given the big picture.
It essentially writes the overarching narrative storyline of your reality. It reminds the cortex of what happened a second ago, so the predictions for the next second logically follow.
It prevents your reality from feeling like a disjointed series of random events.
Exactly.
Okay, let me pause you there, because we really need to take a step back and look at what we've just built. We have the thalamus ticking, the pulvinar gating, the deep layers predicting, the superficial layers error checking, the ocean waves of cross-frequency coupling, reconciling the data, the cerebellum calculating movement, the basal ganglia executing the losers, and the hippocampus narrating the story.
It is a staggering amount of computational effort.
Staggering. And we established that this entire cycle repeats every 10 to 500 milliseconds. My question is, if my biology is engaged in this frantic, impossibly complex, high-energy dance constantly, why doesn't existence just feel like pure, agonizing mental exhaustion?
That's a very fair question.
How do we ever feel a sense of ease or flow?
This raises an important point, and it is central to the ultimate goal of the brain. The goal of all this frantic activity, the biological imperative driving the system, is to reach what Brizard defines as a low-error attractor.
A low-error attractor?
Think of physics. A ball rolling down a bumpy hill wants to find the deepest valley where it can come to rest. That valley is an attractor state.
Okay.
When the brain's internal predictions and the external sensory data finally align, when the D-Day's track perfectly matches the crowd, all those corrective error signals, the RE, drop towards zero.
So the system stops fighting.
Its functional phase space contracts into a stable, highly efficient state.
So all that frantic processing is just the brain desperately searching for the groove. And once it finds the groove, it coasts.
Yes. When those corrections accumulate successfully and the RE drops, it triggers the final step in the sequence. A resonance cascade.
A resonance cascade.
Suddenly, the massive metabolic energy expenditure required for error correction just falls away. All the disparate brain regions, the visual, the auditory, the motor lock, into a shared synchronized phase.
And what does that feel like?
That cascade is the physical, biological correlate of the subjective aha moment. It is the moment the Magic Eye poster suddenly pops into 3D.
Oh, I love that feeling.
It is the moment a novice piano player stops thinking about where their fingers are placed and just plays the melody. The struggle vanishes.
It feels effortless because, neurologically speaking, the predictive conflict has been completely resolved.
The brain is no longer predicting the future. It is resonating with the present.
That reframes the entire concept of learning for me. When you are learning a new language or a new physical skill, the intense frustration you feel isn't just psychological, it is metabolic.
It is exhausting.
You are physically fighting a high resonance error. Your biological system is burning vast amounts of energy-generating models that keep failing. You suffer until your brain refines its model enough to finally cascade into coherence.
Exactly. Now, this is a beautiful, mathematically satisfying narrative. But in science, a theory is just poetry until you can prove it in a laboratory.
Right.
Brizard knows this. So the paper outlines specific, testable predictions about how this framework explains observable phenomena. A good theory must make predictions that can be empirically proven or falsified.
Let's look at the real-world evidence, then. We can move past the abstract modeling and see how TCRF plays out in human testing. The paper lists four specific empirical predictions.
The first one involves bistable perception. We touched on this with the duck-rabbit illusion, but the classic laboratory example is the Necker cube.
Oh, that's the simple line drawing of a 3D transparent cube, right?
That's the one.
If you stare at the center of the drawing, the orientation of the cube will certainly flip. The square face that looked like it was at the back suddenly pops to the front, and vice versa. It involuntarily flips back and forth in your mind as long as you look at it.
Yes. Now, from a physics standpoint, the sensory input, the photons bouncing off the lines on the paper and hitting your retina, is not changing. The raw data is perfectly static.
So why does your conscious reality undergo a violent structural shift?
Brizard predicts that the exact moment the cube flips in your subjective experience is physically preceded by a discrete, measurable shift in the brain's phase coupling, specifically the theta-gamma phase amplitude coupling we discussed earlier.
So to translate that back to our DJ analogy.
Yeah.
The internal DJ is playing the front-facing cube track. It creates resonance for a few seconds.
Right.
But eventually the neural circuit tires out. The phase begins to slip, the resonance error rises slightly, and the brain abandons the model. The DJ completely resets the phase, locking into a brand new rhythm, which forces the conscious perception of the back-facing cube.
The brain is actively cycling through models to see which one maintains the lowest error.
That is so cool.
Which leads directly into the second prediction, surprise-induced disruption. We talked about the dropping plate. In a clinical setting, researchers test this using something called an oddball task.
Yeah, I've read about these. They put a subject in front of a screen and show them a very predictable sequence.
Yeah.
The screen flashes the letter A, then another A, then another A. It establishes a powerful predictive rhythm, and then, completely without warning, it flashes the letter B.
And researchers watch what happens in an fMRI machine.
Let's clarify the fMRI for a moment. An fMRI, or functional magnetic resonance imaging, doesn't read the electricity of the brain directly.
No, it doesn't.
It's essentially a giant, powerful magnet that tracks the oxygenated blood flow inside your skull. When a specific brain region starts working furiously, it needs more oxygen, so blood rushes to that area and the scanner lights up.
So what does TCRF predict will happen to the blood flow and the electrical coherence the exact millisecond that oddball bee appears on the screen?
According to the framework, the appearance of the bee creates a massive structural and temporal error. The predictions fail entirely.
Therefore, TCRF predicts a massive transient drop in cross-regional coherence. The highly synchronized brainwaves that were comfortably predicting the A completely decouple.
The pulvinar drops the connection.
And you see a massive spike in broadband power, a surge of chaotic, high-energy blood flow, specifically in the frontoparietal networks, which handle executive control and attention.
It is the literal physical signature of the brain, abandoning its current model in a state of biological panic.
Yes.
The temporal alignment completely breaks down into chaos before the frontal lobes can step in and rebuild a new model around the reality of the letter B.
The third prediction shifts from surprise to mastery. It focuses on automaticity, or skill acquisition. Brizard terms this mechanism resonance compression.
Okay, resonance compression.
Think about the physical act of learning to type on a computer keyboard.
Oh, when you first learn, it is agonizing. You are hunting and pecking. You look at the screen, look at your finger, look at the key.
Exactly. And the fMRI scans of a novice typist show massive widespread activation all over the cerebral cortex. The brain is burning a tremendous amount of metabolic energy trying to force the motor signals to match the visual targets.
Brie is sky high.
But what happens neurologically when you spend years practicing and become an expert touch typist? This presents a beautiful biological paradox.
What happened?
When you become a master, the overall cortical activation, the raw metabolic energy being consumed by the brain, actually drops significantly. The massive flare of blood flow disappears.
Wow, it uses less energy.
But crucially, TCRF highlights that local phase coherence within the specific motor and linguistic circuits goes up.
So as you master the skill, the brain stops screaming and starts humming. It finds the perfect rhythmic groove.
Yes.
It requires vastly less raw energy because it is no longer fighting a war against prediction errors. The timing of the motor commands is perfectly synced with the tactile feedback of the keys.
The internal predictions perfectly seamlessly match reality. You achieve incredibly high precision with very low energy expenditure. That is resonance compression.
And the fourth and final empirical prediction is perhaps the most futuristic, but it is grounded in current laboratory testing. It involves temporal entrainment.
Temporal entrainment, yeah.
The text outlines the concept that every single person has a unique baseline rhythm ticking away in their brain, known as their individual alpha frequency, or IAF.
It is like a neurological fingerprint. While alpha waves generally sit between 8 and 12 hertz, my resting brain might tick at exactly 9.5 cycles per second, while your resting brain might tick at 10.2 cycles per second.
And TCRF makes a bold prediction based on this personal metronome.
Yeah.
Let's say you are participating in a reaction time test. You have to click a button the exact millisecond you see a light flash on a screen.
Okay.
The researchers monitor your brain waves with an EEG headset, you know, a cap covered in electrodes that reads this faint electrical chatter echoing off your scalp.
And the researchers map your exact individual alpha frequency. They know exactly when the crests and troughs of your alpha waves are occurring in real time.
TCRF predicts that if the computer delivers the flash of light perfectly synchronized to the crest of your personal alpha wave, the exact millisecond your brain's shutter is open, your reaction time will measurably improve. You will be physically faster.
And conversely, if the computer intentionally delivers the flash out of phase hitting the trough of your alpha wave when your predictive shutter is closed, your performance will significantly degrade.
That's crazy.
Even though the physical brightness of the light is identical in both scenarios, your conscious perception and reaction are dictated by the timing.
This proves that human perception isn't just about the raw intensity of the world. It isn't just about how loud a sound is or how bright a light is.
No, it's not.
The speed and clarity of your consciousness are fundamentally governed by the phase alignment of your brainwaves.
It really reframes how we look at interaction.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener, navigating your actual life? Let's take the math and the neuroanatomy out of the lab.
Let's do it.
When you're sitting at your desk at work, fully immersed in a complex project, the office chatter fades away, time seems to dilate, and you feel completely in the zone.
Your brain has literally achieved resonance compression.
You are burning less metabolic fuel because your internal predictive models are perfectly, flawlessly marching in lockstep with the incoming data on your screen. Your resonance error equation is hovering near zero.
You are a perfectly synchronized biological machine experiencing a prolonged resonance cascade.
But then a coworker taps you on the shoulder to ask a trivial question.
It is infuriating.
Yes. And now we know the exact mathematical and biological reasons why it is infuriating. That tap on the shoulder introduces a massive, instantaneous structural and temporal discrepancy.
It shatters the phase amplitude coupling.
The pulvinar drops the connection. Broadband power spikes in your frontal lobes as your brain scrambles to build a model of your coworker. You lose the flow state, and it will take massive metabolic energy to rebuild it.
It is a violent interruption of your temporal coherence. Now, if we can measure this resonance using EEG, and we know that it dictates everything from our flow state to our reaction times, it begs an inevitable question. Can we intentionally manipulate it?
Which brings us to the most impactful and, frankly, the most science fiction aspect of Brizard's paper, clinical and engineering applications, hacking the brain's clock.
The implications for psychiatry and neurology are profound. If we accept the premise that a smooth, functional consciousness relies entirely on maintaining tight temporal coherence, what happens when a brain's internal clockwork is faulty?
Right.
TCRF provides a completely new lens for viewing cognitive disorders. It suggests looking at conditions like ADHD, schizophrenia, and severe dissociation, not just as chemical imbalances, but as dysrhythmias.
Dysrhythmias. Problems with the rhythm? How does TCRF explain ADHD through this lens?
In TCRF terms, a condition like ADHD involves a chronically elevated resonance error. The brain's precision weights, the K1 and K2 dials we discussed, might be fluctuating wildly and unpredictably.
What does that do?
This makes the brain overly sensitive to tiny structural discrepancies in the environment. A shifting shadow or a faint noise that a neurotypical brain would mathematically suppress and ignore instead triggers a massive error signal, breaking the flow state constantly.
The DJ cannot keep a beat locked in.
Exactly.
And what about something more severe like schizophrenia?
The paper hypothesizes that schizophrenia might involve a fundamental widening or distortion of the temporal binding window.
So the timing is totally off.
If the cross-frequency coupling between the deep predictive layers and the superficial sensory layers becomes unmoored, the brain begins to struggle to distinguish its own internal predictive thoughts from external sensory evidence.
That sounds terrifying.
The timing is so chaotic that internal models are perceived as external voices or visions. The brain is trying to force coherence on a broken biological clock.
Historically, psychiatry has treated these conditions by flooding the brain with pharmaceuticals. You know, pills that blanket the entire cortex in dopamine or serotonin, hoping to generally increase or suppress overall activity.
Yes.
But if these are fundamentally timing issues, dysrhythmias, that changes the entire treatment paradigm.
Exactly. Instead of a chemical sledgehammer, TCRF proposes a highly targeted temporal intervention, specifically closed-loop transcranial alternating current stimulation, or TCSS.
Let's break down how TCS actually works physically, because it sounds a bit like old school electroshock therapy, but it is radically different.
It is far more precise. Researchers place small electrode pads on the outside of the patient's scalp. They run a very mild, barely perceptible electrical current through the skull and into the outer layers of the brain.
Right.
But they don't just zap the tissue. The current alternates. It waves up and down at very specific frequencies.
And the critical part of the mechanism is how the neurons react to that electrical field. The current isn't strong enough to force the neurons to fire against their will. That would just cause a seizure.
Correct. Instead, the exogenous electrical field slightly alters the resting membrane potential of millions of neurons simultaneously.
So it changes their baseline.
Neurons fire when their internal electrical charge reaches a certain threshold. By applying this waving external current, you are rhythmically raising and lowering that threshold. You are making it slightly easier for the neurons to fire at the crest of your artificial wave and slightly harder at the trough.
You are essentially coaxing them. You are laying down a strong artificial beat, and the neurons naturally want to start tapping their feet to it.
And in a closed-loop system, the computer isn't just broadcasting blindly. An EEG is reading the patient's real-time brainwaves, analyzing the phase coherence.
So it's watching what the brain is actually doing.
Yeah. If the computer detects that the frontal lobe and the parietal lobe are drifting out of sync, the rhythm is stumbling, the TCS system instantly calculates the phase offset and delivers a perfectly timed electrical nudge to pull the drifting region back onto the beat.
It acts as an active external pacemaker for consciousness.
Yes, it is literally an IT department for your brain, constantly pinging the servers, detecting the lag, and rebooting the router before your reality can fragment.
And if we could do this for clinical dysrhythmias, the technology naturally extends into human augmentation via brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs.
Right now, BCIs mostly focus on reading motor intent, allowing a paralyzed person to move a cursor on a screen by thinking about it.
Yeah.
But TCRF provides a principled mathematical reason for a BCI to decode the timing structure of the brain, not just the motor output. A future BCI could continuously monitor a user's resonance health, which is a real-time proxy for their resonance error, their RE.
Consider the applications for ultra-high-stakes environments. An air traffic controller managing dozens of planes. A neurosurgeon 10 hours into a complex operation.
If the air traffic controller's BCI detects that their temporal alignment is beginning to deteriorate, meaning their alpha gating is getting sloppy, their theta sequences are dropping beats, and their RE is climbing, the system knows they are losing cognitive coherence before the controller even realizes they are tired.
And the BCI could autonomously intervene to prevent a catastrophic error. It could automatically slow down the flow of new information on their radar screen.
Or, more actively, it could deliver subtle, phase-locked interventions.
Like it could play a barely audible rhythmic pulse in their earpiece, or gently strobe the ambient lighting in the room, perfectly synchronized to the controller's individual alpha frequency.
Exactly.
It would use sensory entrainment to literally drag their drifting brainwaves back into a state of high coherence. It forms a cyborg loop. The human maintains the machine, and the machine actively maintains the human's consciousness.
It's an incredible possibility.
Now, this all sounds incredibly powerful, but as the host, I have to play devil's advocate. I am looking at the limitations section of Brizard's own paper to push back on this grand unifying theory.
Okay, let's hear it.
Is it entirely possible that TCRF is simply mistaking correlation for causation?
That is the classic trap of neuroimaging, and it must be addressed.
Right. We see these brainwaves sync up when people are paying close attention, and we see them desync when people make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But could a drop in phase coherence just be a general byproduct of a lack of arousal?
Yeah.
Like maybe the person is just getting sleepy, or their brain is preparing to move a muscle, and the timing of the brainwaves changing is just a side effect of those broader states?
Yeah.
How do we know that this predictive resonance breaking down is the actual cause of the perceptual shift?
Brizard anticipates this exact critique. To definitively prove causality in neuroscience, you have to run experiments that successfully decorrelate rate from phase.
Decorrelate rate from phase. Break that down for me.
Rate refers to the sheer amount of energy in the system, how fast the neurons are firing overall, which correlates to general arousal or effort. Phase is purely the timing alignment of that firing. TCRF demand experiments where we lock the rate in place, but manipulate the phase.
So you keep the stimulus energy completely constant. The screen is the exact same brightness, the sound is the exact same volume, and you keep the person's overall arousal level steady.
Yes. And then, using that TCS technology, you artificially manipulate the entrainment phase. You gently shift the timing of their brainwave so they're slightly out of sync with the visual stimulus without changing the overall energy of the brain.
And if their perception of the visual illusion changes or their reaction time suddenly drops purely because you shifted the internal timing,
then it proves that timing is the primary causal control channel. It proves that phase alignment isn't just a metabolic side effect of being awake and alert. It is the fundamental mechanical blueprint constructing the perception.
And what do the studies show?
The early studies using these phase-targeted perturbations strongly support TCRF. When you artificially disrupt the timing, the subject's reality fragments, even if the overall energy in their cortex remains exactly the same. The phase is the code.
Wow. We have traveled a massive distance today. From the physics of light and sound arriving at the body, down to the microscopic rhythmic firing of the pulvinar deep in the center of the skull.
All the way to a near future where machines actively monitor and maintain our conscious coherence.
In the final synthesis of the paper, Brizard offers a brilliant summary of his overarching thesis. He writes that conscious perception is, at its core, a temporally regulated contract between hypothesis and evidence.
A temporally regulated contract. I absolutely love that phrasing. It strips away all the mysticism of consciousness.
It perfectly encapsulates the dual active nature of reality. The brain brings the hypothesis to the table, the vast architecture of predictions, expectations, and internal models built from past experience.
Right.
The outside world brings the evidence, the raw photons hitting the retina, the pressure waves vibrating the ear. And they meet in the middle, in the cortex.
When the predictions arrive exactly on time and their structure matches the evidence, the contract is honored. The result is a unified, effortless experience of reality.
But when that contract is violated, when the timing is off by just a few milliseconds, or the structural reality aggressively contradicts the prediction reality for a split second, shatters.
The brain is forced to rapidly renegotiate the contract, generating a massive error signal, shifting its phase, searching for a new rhythm, and dragging the system toward a new, stable attractor.
So I want to remind you, the learner, of what this deeply complex science means for you right now as you listen to these words. Every single moment you experience is an active, high-stakes biological negotiation.
Yes, it is.
The annoyance you feel at a lagged video call isn't just a superficial technological frustration. It is a profound violation of your brain's fundamental operating principle.
And the thrill of a sudden epiphany, that rush of absolute clarity when a complex problem finally makes sense, is the literal physical sensation of a resonance cascade sweeping across your cortex.
Your brain is actively, fiercely building your reality millisecond by millisecond.
It is a beautiful, exhausting, miraculous process.
It really is. But before we sign off, I want to leave you with a final mind-expanding question. Something that isn't directly answered in Brizard's mathematical framework, but builds naturally on everything we've just explored.
Okay, let's hear it.
We talked about the future of brain-computer interfaces, devices that act as pacemakers for the mind. If we reach a point where BCIs can perfectly monitor our resonance error in real time, and they use targeted, imperceptible electrical stimulation to instantly nudge our brain waves back into perfect sync every time we stumble, we could theoretically keep a human being in a perpetual state of temporal coherence.
We could engineer a state of permanent flow.
A completely frictionless consciousness, the ultimate low-error attractor. But if we perfectly, artificially correct our resonance error in real time, what happens to the human experience of struggle, surprise, and learning?
That's a huge question.
Biological learning inherently requires the pain of the error signal. Humor, a joke, relies entirely on the sudden, unexpected violation of a structural prediction.
The punchline is an error signal.
Exactly. The sublime feeling of awe often comes from an experience like seeing the Grand Canyon that completely overwhelms and shatters our internal models. If we use technology to ensure we never experience the glitch of a broken perceptual contract, do we lose the very friction that makes us human? Are we trading our cognitive freedom, our capacity for genuine, unscripted, chaotic surprise for a synthetic, machine-managed state of permanent flow?
It is the ultimate philosophical dilemma born from the neuroscience. If the video call never, ever glitches, do we eventually forget that we are looking at a screen at all?
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the reality your brain is quietly building for you every millisecond.